Good morning.
We're convening as the Budget and Finance Committee, and we're going to get started a little late here, but hopefully we'll be able to move through this agenda expeditiously, but with a lot of verve and intelligence. All right, yes, verve. Okay. So we're going to start out. Do we need to do a Pledge of Allegiance or actually roll call? Thank you, Marcy.
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of December 7th, 2017, Director Canepa, Director Chavez, Director Joya, Director Hudson, Director Miley, Director Mitchoff, Director Ross, Committee Vice Chair Rice, Committee Chair Groom, Board Chair Niss. We have a quorum.
All right, and we need to do a Pledge of Allegiance, yes? I guess so. Did we already do one? Okay, we're good. I'm good with that. All right, public comment. Is anyone here for public comment? Seeing none, we're going to go on to item 3, which is approval of the minutes of April 26th. And I was not here, but I have read the minutes, and so I believe I can vote on them, which would allow us to vote on that. Do we have a quorum here to vote on this? Okay.
I make the motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, item 4 is the fourth quarter financial report for fiscal year ending 2017.
Thank you, Chair Rice. Our manager of finance, Stephanie Osaz, will give 2 quarterly reports.
Good morning, Vice Chair and members of the Budget and Finance Committee. I will try to be brief. Please stop me if you have any questions. We've prepared this before and you've seen these quarterly reports. So I'll begin with the fourth quarter reporting for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2017. So this is basically the preliminary financial report. The final audited report will be presented by our auditors at the next scheduled committee meeting. The report covers the...
With no findings.
Thank you. The report covers the revenue, expenditures, investment, our fund balance, and unfunded liabilities, and we have our purchasing report requirements. So to begin, this slide provides a summary of our revenues for the entire fiscal year and compares it to what was adopted for 2017. So just to hit the highlights here, we did see our actual revenues exceed the budget by about $7 million or 10%. And the main reason for those increases resulted from the increase in housing and construction activities, which resulted in higher county receipts, as well as increases in asbestos fees than was initially budgeted. We also saw a slight increase in our penalties and settlements revenue category, as well as our interest revenues than what was initially projected. This next slide provides a revenue comparison looking at the prior fiscal year of 2016 and comparing it to the 2017 fiscal year. And when we compare these two years, some of the significant differences that we see is our county receipts again being up in 2017. And again, that's primarily due to the property value increases that we saw. Permit fees really increased due to the increase in the fee schedule. And one other line category that we saw a significant difference was the penalties and settlements. And again, this is a category that does fluctuate from year to year. And we did see a significant settlement in 2016. This next slide looks at the other side of the house, if you will, at expenditures. And we look at the entire fiscal year actuals and compare it to what was initially budgeted. And as you can see, most of the categories are pretty much on target with what we initially budgeted. We did have the building acquisition purchase towards our purchase here of this building or this space for about $10.7 million. Did I skip one? I'm sorry. Okay, there we go. So our next slide shows the expenditure comparison, and similar with the revenues, we look at the prior year and compare it to the current year and look at what the significant changes were. So in terms of the personnel salaries, we saw an increase in salaries, and that really reflects the 2.2% COLA that was received in 2017, and we also saw an increase in employees. The increase in the benefit category is mainly due to the additional OPEB contribution that we made, payment we made in 2017, and we also received a higher health premium premium rates as well. In terms of services and supplies, we did see a slight increase there, and that's mainly due to the move here at 375 Beale. And in terms of the building acquisition, as I mentioned before, we had that for 2017. And then we saw a slight decrease in the capital category, and that was due to the parking lot structure purchase we made in 2016. So this next slide shows our cash account balance with the San Mateo County pool at June 30th, 2017. And the district's $197 million represents about 4.1% of the entire county investment pool, which is $4.9 billion. The pool interest, or the pooled interest earned, was 1.175% in the fourth quarter. This slide shows the fund balance as well as the unfunded liabilities. We provide a 3-year comparison looking at the 2015 audited fund balance and the 2016 audited fund balance. And as of 2017 unaudited, this is still our preliminary results, we estimate the fund balance to be $45.6 million. And at the bottom of that chart, our unfunded liabilities based on the 2015 actuarial valuation was $92 million. And finally, as a part of the quarterly report, we provide a listing of the reoccurring routine business payments that exceeds $100,000 without board review. And this next slide provides a list of those vendor payments we made for the entire fiscal year. And as you can see, they mainly consist of employee benefit payments and some of our other required services needed to conduct the day-to-day operations of the district. And this concludes my presentation for the fourth quarter. Any questions?
Thank you, Stephanie.
Madam
questions?
Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Tell me a little bit our reserve policy at the board for the Bay Area Quality Management District. How much do we have in reserve now, and what's our policy?
So, Jeff, would you like to?
Director Canepa, our policy is that we should, as a minimum, keep in reserves 20% of our annual budget. So the budget for this year is almost $100 million, so that would be $20 million, although we're using a lot of we're using reserves for some of that budget, so there could be a correction there. But in any event, $19 million, let's say, would be the minimum. So as you can see, unaudited right now is about $41 million, so we're comfortably above that. However, I will be showing a slide that shows we were in a similar comfortable position in 2007. and managed to draw that all the way down.
So. Thank you, Madam Chair. In years past, we had drawn on our reserve, correct? And what was the now tell me, historically, over those period of years, what was the percentage that we drew on our reserves?
So I have a slide in the presentation coming up that has a bar chart for every one of those years. But basically what happened was our minimum at that time was 15% from the board guidance. In my memory, that was something like $7 million. It's on the chart. And we drew ourselves down from over $30 million to exactly that minimum before we recovered and started going back up. Thank you, Jack. Jack's pulled up the slide for me. So yeah, we drew our, okay, the minimum, by the time we hit the minimum, was $10 million, and we drew ourselves down to that. Our minimum when the downturn hit was more like $7 million. So that's what we've done in the past.
So I recall from our other discussions on unfunded liabilities, which is the slide that's number 8, I think we're doing pretty well, as I recall. Could you just say a little about that? Because that's every governing body's, you know, nightmare at the moment is that unfunded liabilities. But I think we have had a good, solid method for really keeping this in, at least in touch, if not intact.
We have, Chair Nis. Thank you. And our methodology has been multi-pronged. We've certainly tried to manage our staffing levels, and that's been important. We're now, of course, having to increase those. We've attempted to get ahead of the curve on some of our unfunded liabilities. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. In 2008, we had zero for our OPEB funding, and now we're at 60% OPEB funded. So that's a positive story. And in addition, I'd like to point out that as we aggressively fund OPEB, we'll then be able to back off on that, which is what will make us more comfortable as we then have to step up to CalPERS coming in and, frankly, over the next 4 to 5 years, taking about 10% of our budget beyond what they're taking now.
Yeah, it's, I think, as I said, every governing body is just struggling with this that's in the PERS system.
Yes.
If you're not in the PERS system, I think you're lucky. But it really, what we're seeing as we look ahead is just not, certainly not advantageous for us.
Yes, Director Chair Nis, you're exactly right. And in fact, in a private meeting with the CalPERS representative last week, he indicated to me that the official numbers, which I have in some charts coming up, bringing the discount rate down to 7%, he felt was probably overly optimistic, and the discount rate would be dropping below that.
Yeah, we've even heard 6.5.
Yes.
Which would be shocking.
That's what I heard.
Right. Thanks.
All right, and I suspect when we go on to item 6, we'll probably talk some more about these higher level items, reserves, unfunded liability, et cetera. So, Stephanie, that was great for a review of the fourth quarter. So why don't, if any public comment on this item? There's no other questions? No public comment. Okay, so thank you, and welcome again for item 5, I suspect. Yes? You doing 5? All right.
Thank you, Vice Chair Rice. I will be very brief on this report as it just covers the first quarter of the current fiscal year. And there's less activity for the first quarter. So the format is the same. We'll talk about what was initially adopted and look at the actuals for the first quarter. And as you could see, our county receipts, as with most other agencies, we don't really see much activity there. We usually get our first half of our county receipts in December. So the second quarter report will reflect more activity in that category. Our fees are pretty much in line with what we expect for the year. In terms of the next slide, the revenue comparison, we just take a look quickly at that. And the reason why we have our fee or permit fee looking slightly higher in 2018 is that we're seeing a lot more of the, it's just really a timing issue. We're seeing a lot more payments in 2018 than we did in 2017, as well as the fact that we did have a fee increase as well. I do want to mention that. The second line that is sort of significant just to hit on is, again, is penalties and settlements, and that one is slightly lower right now. And again, that's a category that fluctuates, so that may change during the fiscal year. The next slide provides the general fund expenses, actual as of the first quarter, and comparing it to the budget. And, you know, right now we're pretty much on target where we should be with terms of most of our salaries and benefits. This category, we do have some vacancies, and we expect some of these are really related to timing of when we make payments for our services and supplies. So, again, it's too early to tell, but we're projected to be on target. Now we look at the prior year first quarter of 2017 and compare it to 2018. And what we see here in terms of salaries is the COLA that we received back in July was 2.7%, so that slightly increased for 2018. In terms of our benefits, it's slightly higher due to a timing of the pension contribution to CalPERS. And so we did do a one-time lump sum payment for the required unfunded liability payment for CalPERS. And so that's why you're seeing that number slightly higher. This again provides the sort of our investment portfolio with the county as of September. And there's the interest rate at that time is 1.315%, so slightly higher. Again, we show you our fund balance and unfunded liability. The difference with this chart is now it adds the 2018 projected fund balance. And as was mentioned earlier, we did the board did approve the use of fund balance of $7.8 million for this year's budget. So that's reflected here in this table or this chart. And that will reduce the projected fund balance down to about $37.7 million. We also did receive our unfunded liability valuation report for 2016, both from CalPERS and OPEB. And so our unfunded liabilities increased to $105 million. This last slide, again, looks at the purchasing reporting requirement, as mentioned earlier, with the more than 100,000 vendor payments that we made, and this provides the listing of the payments that we've made since September. And again, it includes mostly our benefit payments that we make for our employees. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? All right, I have a question, process question. Is there anything on the agenda today that will require an action by the committee? Okay, so
yes, there is the last item.
We're going to be losing Director Ross in about 10 minutes or less. 10 minutes. Do we have a quorum without him? We can, because Liz can vote.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I need to leave by noon.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest actually, should we move mm-hmm. up that item and do it right yeah. now when we may I lose would. Mark, but we'll at least have Liz. Yeah. Right.
That sounds good.
Okay.
He's going to have to rely on me a little bit more for the finance part.
Oh, yeah.
Since I did not go first, I was going to assess it.
Well, so if you don't mind, Madam Chair and members of the committee, let me give you a little bit of a heads up. And this is building upon Director Canepa's question about our reserves. We have been very diligent in building up our reserves, but we're about to show you how we're going to spend some of that. Because we have some important hurdles facing us, or some challenges, let me use that word, for next year. So with that, Rex, take it away.
Thank you. And just for the record, because I don't know, so we're now reviewing item 7 on the agenda, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Good morning, Vice Chair Rice. And members of the Budget and Finance Committee. I am going to just flip over the second slide here. As you know, and we've heard a lot this morning in the previous meeting, the Air District has expanded its programs through both rulemaking efforts and through recent state laws. Regulation 11, Rule 18, was passed in November by the board, and as you know, that rule requires the district to conduct screening analysis for all facilities that report toxic air contaminant emissions, calculate health prioritization scores, and conduct health risk assessments. Assembly Bill 617 was signed into law in July, and that bill requires that the ARB work closely with us and the other local air districts, community groups, community members, environmental organizations, and regulated industries to reduce harmful air emissions and create a new framework for community protection. Assembly Bill 134 was signed in September into law, and it adds provisions related to the greenhouse gas expenditure plan, allocates $50 million to the air district. And as we heard in the Mobile Source Committee, There's been various, thank you, new other sources of grant funds that have come into the Air District this year. So what we're coming to you today to ask is to enhance the staffing of the Air District by 22 new full-time staff positions. 9 of those positions will be covered by new funding, and 13 of the positions will be covered by our general fund revenue. Now I'm going to walk through the different areas of the Air District that will be enhanced by this staffing increase. In 2018, the Air District will administer $101 million in new revenues as a result of AB 134 and other funding sources. 5 staff positions are proposed for our grants SID division. As a result of AB 134 and other funding sources, and in conjunction with repurposing some of our general fund revenue, 4 staff positions are proposed for our technology implementation office. And as a result of 1118, risk screenings, health risk analyses, HRA consultant oversight, data and inventory refinement, and participation in both public and industry review processes, we are recommending 5 staff positions in the engineering division. Also, as a result of the requirements of 617, staff is proposing to create a new section, the Community Protection Office, to engage with AB 617 communities and to understand air quality impacts in their unique communities, to ensure that those communities have the education on monitoring and air quality issues, to engage productively with both the Air District and the ARB to understand community concerns and to advocate for them. We're recommending 3 staff positions for this new office. AB 617 will require that the current ambient air monitoring network adapts and expands to focus on more localized impacts. Additional staff is required for that, and we are recommending 5 positions for our meteorology and measurements division. Our recommendation today to you is to amend the fiscal year ending 2018 budget to authorize the creation of 22 additional full-time positions and also accept approximately $5 million in funding resulting from Assembly Bill 617. That concludes the formal presentation, but we're happy to take any questions that you may have.
All right. Director Ross, do you have anything? Nope, you're all good? All right. Director Canepa.
So, Madam Chair, if I can just add a little bit more to Mr. Sanders' presentation, and I think Mr. McKay probably has a little bit more as well. But this 617, I know that we're moving kind of quickly on it. It's largely because the bill has some very aggressive goals, very ambitious goals. I'll just give you one in particular. We're required under this bill to have a draft list of impacted communities in and around the Bay Area by as early as March. And then if I recall, it's a final list by August of next year. And just to undertake that step is gonna require some effort. But keep in mind, as Rex indicated, once we then identify these communities, we're gonna then have to get out and put in place a fairly dense monitoring network. And so this is essentially going to be a large part of what we try to get done next year. And I think the legislature understood that they are establishing some very aggressive goals. I personally testified to that point, and in fact, we actually argued against this bill without any kind of funding. So the bill that has come has said, okay, well, let us give to the districts $27 million, and that $5 million of the $27 million is ours. That's a little bit of back explanation as to how that dollar is. And so that's also part of our legislative platform for next year, because we're going to need to figure out how to sustain that funding moving forward, just to pay for administratively to manage this program. In the Mobile Source Committee, we talked about a $250 million tranche that's coming to all the districts to help with this, and that's for the mobile source mitigation. We get $50 million of that part of it, just to give you an idea, not to confuse you. But there is a lot of this money coming our way, and it's all going to have to be focused down on the local communities. I just think the best place for us to have a very in-depth conversation about this is at the retreat. Incoming chair, I don't mean to let you know that add more on there, but really I think that is going to be the the main item is this 617. So I just, Madam Chair, I just wanted to add a little bit more context to Mr. Sanders' presentation. We understand this is a heavy lift. This 22 is not a small number. Yeah. And Rex, we have about, what's the exact numbers we have in total right now with the agency?
Yeah. We have staffed 331 positions. We have about an 8% vacancy rate.
Right, but we've authorized up to go up to?
359.
Right, 359. So this would be on top of the 359.
Okay, so just to follow up on that before Director Canepa, so I was going to ask about our existing budgeted positions, what positions are vacant, and have we, you know, are we continually looking at what we've budgeted for? This is, you know, prior to adding on 22 new different positions, mm-hmm. to ensure that those positions are still required. I mean, so you said there's 8% of the budgeted positions are currently unfilled?
Correct.
And what's the forecast for those positions?
We are looking to fill those positions as well. Just to your point, we look at every vacancy that occurs in the agency and determine whether that vacancy is still required for the work that we do or whether we need to change or adapt it to the new work that's coming up or what we're currently experiencing. We've had a lot of retirements this year and last year, and so that is something that we do on a regular basis to just determine whether the positions that we have budgeted and marked for a certain group is actually necessary. So it's
okay, and then with regards to the grant, the funding that is outside of the general fund that's funding some of these positions, what's the timeline in terms of how long that grant funding will exist, and what's our plan to cover those positions once that grant
Long-term.
Funding? Yes.
Yeah, Damien, do you want to?
We've looked at a couple of different things in projecting that. We have additional funds that are not. We're not asking the board of directors to accept today. They come in the future to fund actually some of those positions. So we've kept the staffing level at a level that we think can accomplish the work that we need to accomplish, but in the future has long-term sustained funding. So in addition to these two assembly bills, there was another one passed this year that extended the smog holiday for 2 years, and it's going to generate about $7.5 million for the Eyre District, of which we get 6.25% in administrative funding. The combination of those administrative funds, grant competitions and one-time funding, and projected increases in the number of vehicles that are actually registered in the Bay Area were all taken into account in the staffing recommendation. So the nine positions that you see in front of you rely on general fund revenue that we have under current budget and those projections into the future. So we think that those funding sources are stable, you know, in a time frame that stretches out to 10 years.
Thank you. Director Canepa.
Madam Chair. I'm curious. Now, curiosity's piqued. So there's 22 new positions that are being proposed, right? And then just so that I understand the math, Mr. McKay, can you tell me what the financial number? So nine of those positions are going to be funded through grant funding. Is that?
That's correct.
All right. And so then 13 others, is that correct?
Yes.
Would be funded from the general fund. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Great. And so what's the cost of that?
So
of doing that
in, I'll give a relatively long-winded answer, please. So in the current year, no change to the budget is required. And the reason is we're already halfway through the year. And as Rex has indicated, we have a vacancy rate that leaves some headroom in the budget. So between the fact that it takes some time to hire and the headroom from the vacancy rate, we don't need to amend the numbers in the current year budget. Going forward, fortunately, we have an answer going forward that I like, in that it is sort of a steady hand on the rudder, so to speak, answer, which is the board has adopted a cost recovery policy of 85%. And by continuing with that policy and not at a rate that is any higher than in the past, the ability to add these people will be sustained. And so just as part of the regular budgeting process where we bring forward the cost recovery policy and the fees every year, we'll be able to sustain that hiring level.
So I guess what I'm looking for, I guess my question wasn't very clear, Mr. McKay. I'm looking for the actual dollar amount.
$1 million a year is about seven people on average, yep.
Okay, you're the mathematician, not me.
Sorry.
So that's $3 million, right?
So for the 12 positions, that's right.
13.
Yeah.
So that's $3 million. Okay.
Director Ness.
Yeah, may I jump in from
sure.
there on a couple of things? Rather than protract that discussion, I think long-term we really do have to look at Sacramento for more money. I think we would be not responsible if we didn't say we've got to continue to do that and lean on whomever the next governor is. But looking at slide five, where it says ensure that those communities have the education on monitoring and air quality issues, that seems to be a very complicated kind of thing. I'm not quite sure how we're going to measure that they've had their kind of education, and I know where that's headed, but it looks like I'm not quite sure how we'll accomplish that and how we know we've been successful.
Right. Yes, so good. It's a very good question, Chair Ness. I think that it is a new enhanced effort to work with communities on the air quality in their communities and the issues that rise. And so it will take some concerted effort to work in those communities, and we think that work is well placed at the local air districts. CARB has a role to play in AB 617, but that community engagement needs to happen here at the local level. And in addition to the three staff positions that we're proposing here would be our complete community engagement team. So we would have the staff to work in those communities and help. We will listen to the community and the concerns that they have, and we will work to help them understand what is the monitoring technology that can be used and what we can learn from that, and what are the options and technologies that could help with achieving those emission reductions. So I think that part of the process will be figuring out what is it that we're going to use to measure success, and it might vary from one community to another.
Well, probably what we hear the most often during board meetings is people who come to complain about their particular area, their city, their wherever it may be, whether it's, you know, in Oakland or whether it's, you know, the other parts of San Francisco that are so affected. But we hear that, so I think it's going to be important to look for the leaders in those areas as well and include them in on this education on monitoring and air quality issues, because unless we can bring that group to the party, I think I'm not sure that we'll feel that we've had success in that. And people frequently don't believe that you've really had the success we've already had.
Director Hudson?
Yeah, two things. If you go back to slide four, which gets my vote immediately, is what you're talking about here is exactly what I just did a speech on and say these are my priorities. Particulate matter, methane, your toxic air contaminants, and this technology implementation office. So if you're showing value for where we're going, it's hard to vote against something you're asking staff to do. So you're going to get my support. What Liz just said is even more important. We're going to have to go back to Sacramento for more money. Where I have a problem, and probably will make a little bit of a mention, how about it that way, I'll hit it softly, is something Director Canepa brought up last budget rounds, whatever we went through a year ago. And that is the refineries, or the top name up there, is already at 100%. So you don't want to go higher with them. But I've been on budget for a few years now, and every year, Jeff, you've already heard this, you can close your ears. Every year we hit this bottom ring for 9%, and you just can't keep doing that. And I know we've got that 6% level somewhere in the middle. So I'm wondering if there isn't some way at the top, where we are at the refineries, to at least raise them what the cost of living index is and take away from that 9. I think we need to set another bar other than 9. I mean, to me, it would be 6, but I mean, think about it. Every 8 years, we're doubling their fees. And the problem in a nutshell was we got to 85, then we went for climate protection and it dropped. Now we'll probably get close to 85. We're going for technology implementation and it'll drop. Somebody's going to notice that they don't like the way things are going when their fees are jumping like that. And then we look at the fees and it's a 50 or if it's 60 or something. So you don't think it's that much. But everybody protects their own. And I see that as a problem we might want to address this year. If not, that's about as much you'll hear out of me.
Now, Director Hudson, we know where you're coming from, and I share your concern about continuing the fee increases. We are undertaking a very comprehensive cost recovery study this year. We do that every,
About 3 or 4 years.
3 years, yeah. So you'll have the benefit of that cost recovery study in your decision-making on the budget.
I've got to add one more thing. I had a ton of questions on my agenda, and your staff members are so efficient that everything's cleaned up and it's gone, so there won't be any more questions.
I have a resolution for you. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Is that a joke?
All right, so any more questions or comments up here? Anybody from the public to speak on this? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back here. So we're just today voting to recommend your... push your recommendation up to the full board in terms of amending the budget, the fiscal 2018 budget to authorize the creation of 22 additional full-time positions as described, and then secondly, accept approximately $5 million in funding resulting from the Assembly Bill 617. So you need our committee to give all that an affirmative. So I'm looking around the committee. I'd like a motion.
I move it with one special little thing after parentheses. Somebody give Carol a call and let her know what we did.
Yes. Hold it.
Second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye. Okay. And I expect we'll have a robust discussion at the board level when it comes there as well. So thank you for your work.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention to you, we're also going to bring this to the executive committee as well, trying to brief as many of the board before the board full board meeting.
Right. So now we're going to go back up to, what are we on? Item 6? Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Chair Rice, members of the Budget and Finance Committee. Every year I give a mid-year financial update to this committee. It's usually in January. This year, we've got quite a few complex topics. I'm going to need to break that financial update into two pieces in January and February. And in addition, it's appropriate to give a high-level overview of some of the more important topics today to ensure that we are correctly understanding board direction. The goal today is not to go into great detail, except, of course, as the committee leads. And I do want to point out, importantly, that we do believe we have committee and board direction on these topics I'm going to bring up. But I think today, to quickly touch base, since it's been almost a year, to make sure that we're appropriately representing that direction and you have an appropriate expectation for how that will manifest in January and February. Excuse me. So, well, that says what I just said. So, I'm first going to talk about staffing and fee increases, two related topics. Really, the topic is cost recovery slash fee increases. And then the next three topics are about, in a sense, all about our reserves, if one wants to think of our CalPERS contributions and our OPEB contributions also as reserves. So I'll talk about how we're looking after our reserves and our retirement options, and I'll also couch that in terms of diversification of our investments. Let me start with a little bit of background. This is the slide showing our reserves over a period of time. We went through several years where we did have to use reserves to meet our budget. Use of reserves was not our only methodology by any means. We also let attrition occur. We cut back on spending, and the board was kind enough to implement a very effective cost recovery policy. And this and other tools were all used to take us through that downturn in a relatively smooth way, steady hand on the rudder, I like to say, and now we've recovered substantially. And in what you just saw from Stephanie, you would have seen that the unaudited number for the reserve is 41, although with the authorized use of reserves from the board, that would bring us back down to 33. And 20% is the board guidance for the minimum. Just a little more background staffing trends. This is filled seats, not budgeted numbers. As of the end of fiscal year, as you can see, end of 2017 was 326, and Rex has just mentioned that we're currently at 331. New expanded programs have already been touched on.
Katie, could I ask one thing of Jeff? Jeff, 20% I think is pretty high. I don't recall that most governing bodies have that high a reserve. Am I correct?
There has been some discussion of this, Chairness. We were 15, and the board's direction was...
I like 20. That's not my issue. I just think it's unusual to have that much of a percent set aside.
Chairness, I think you'll find a correlation between the size of the entity and the percentage of reserves that they set as a minimum. Smaller entities tend to use larger percentages because it's a smaller gross number.
And I would just add, the budget committees had a lot of discussions around reserves and reserve levels, and I think it was our most recent, and we raised it up to 20, but with a lot of discussion, and I think consensus.
Yeah. I know our county ran at 5, and they were delighted.
So let me turn now to cost recovery, which is the other side of the hiring topic. As I mentioned earlier, the board has put in place a cost recovery policy. It targets 85% as a minimum. The health and safety code allows us 100% cost recovery. In moving towards 85% cost recovery, we've not sought to reach that point in a single year, but to get there very gradually over time. We've been averaging about 6% or a little more annual fee increases. This consistency has been supported by the regulated community, and in addition, as Jack Broadbent has already indicated, we have ongoing right now a full cost recovery study, which we do in-house every year, but a full one which we do with external participants every 3 to 4 years, and that includes the regulated community as well as members of the EJ community, and we will be coming back with those results in January and February to discuss what they have found. Preliminary results look quite consistent with our past results. And we are currently at about 81% with our last full recovery study. With our current very large vacancy rate, we could now be as high as 85% cost recovery. However, clearly if we hire all those vacancies, we will back to Director Hudson's point, we will, even without the 22 positions that have been passed to the board today, just hiring the existing vacancies, we will be back down well below 85% and would need to once again consider fee increases to achieve that cost recovery. So in January, February, I will come forward with an updated cost recovery study and a recommendation that in the budget cycle to come, we continue the course, as we have for several years, towards maintaining 85% with a nominal 6% fee increase. Let me talk now about reserve diversification. Again, this is just a high-level discussion to go down as much detail as you like here, but the point being to ensure that we're properly understanding board direction, which we think we do, so that when you see the results manifested in January and February, they meet your expectations. Technically, our reserves have to be cash with the counties. We use San Mateo. However, in practice, there are other ways to do some diversification of our reserves. Certainly, real estate ownership is one methodology. In addition, effectively, our investments in CalPERS and OPEB constitute a sort of diversification of our investments, because when we have sufficient reserves there, then that frees up money from our general fund. So we don't have a lot of options, but we do have some. Let me talk about those, starting with real estate. Of course, we own about 90,000 square feet in this building. However, we still have $4 million left over from the sale of the building we had over next to Van Ness. And we have discussed with this committee previously, but not yet brought forward specifics on a subsequent cash purchase of about 10,000 square feet in this building, nominally at the same terms under which we purchased what we already own. So far, what we believe we've heard from the committee and the board is that that is something we should proceed with. Not saying yes, pull the trigger, but saying yes, do please bring forward to us a specific proposal. So we're working on that. We do have timing the issues relative to our partners on this, MTC and Baja. They're very willing and very eager to work with us. They have some reconfiguration of their space that's going on that precludes immediate decisions about where the space would be. But hopefully we'll come forward with that early next year. Another opportunity for us would be to stop renting over in the East Bay, or at least cut back on our renting in the East Bay and other parts of the Bay Area, and do a purchase. We do not anticipate that the purchase would be entirely offset in an actuarial sense by the reduced lease and rent, but it would be somewhat offset, and this would be another way of diversifying our investments. It also has other ancillary positive aspects. We have a lot of staff who work in the East Bay, who live in the East Bay, and there would be a lot of benefits to having a space over there. So we have already performed a study to describe what exactly kind of space we need, and we're turning this now over to a broker to identify a specific space, and we would then anticipate, once we have sufficient specificity, bringing some ideas forward to the committee and board to see if those ideas are indeed of interest.
Jeff, how much space are we renting over there right now?
Right now, in total, our leases are running about $800,000 per year.
No, how much square footage?
I apologize. Oh. I don't have the conversion to square feet.
Okay.
I tend to work in dollars. I'm sorry. But I can get that.
How much are we currently renting? So we have space in the East Bay right now that we're renting.
We do, and I don't know the square footage. I think it's substantially greater than this, but I can certainly get you that number.
So this would be in addition to or to offset some of what we're renting?
We would stop some of that renting.
Okay.
That is correct. Yeah. So let me now talk about CalPERS, a difficult topic for many of us. CalPERS and medical retirement matter very much in and of themselves, but also should be considered holistically as part of our diversification strategy. Let me review quickly our status with CalPERS. According to CalPERS, with some optimistic discount rates, we're 73% funded on a $283 million obligation. The board has put in place a policy of seeking a 90% funding level. There is not a target date, but we have begun pre-funding in our budget years, and I know what that pre-fund number is. It's not that typo there. It's $1 million in 2018.
Jeff, yeah. I have a question for you. On the target date, why haven't you chosen a target date?
So this is a board policy, and right now I would say that it felt like, and I'm speaking for the board a little bit here, but the sense I got was that moving forward with creating some pre-funding, admittedly not at a rate that would have a very significant impact on reaching 90%, but simply moving ahead with some pre-funding was an appropriate initial step, and that consideration of putting in place a target date with all that that would imply could be something to be taken up in a subsequent budget cycle, perhaps this budget cycle.
So let me ask you, I understand the board has given you direction and you're implementing it. What's the advantage of having a target date from your position?
A target date dictates a pre-funding amount. So if we had a target date, then we would run the numbers and say, therefore, in the current fiscal year, we need to pre-fund by X. So we don't have that right now, so the amount of the pre-fund is somewhat by the seat of our pants, somewhat arbitrary.
And as a person who oversees the funding, or not the funding, the accounting of the organization, is that something that would be beneficial to you?
It would simplify the process and formalize the process of picking a pre-funding amount, so it would be convenient in that sense, yes.
What I'm hearing from you is yes, correct?
I think that there are good reasons to continue to move ahead towards having a target date.
And Jeff, when do we usually discuss this? I'm sorry to belabor the point here, but I'm trying to go somewhere with this.
Sure.
When do we talk about the target date? Is this the first quarter, second quarter of next year, or when can we give you direction?
So I absolutely will be setting this topic up for January and February, and that would be an excellent time for direction. And in particular, well, with some slides coming forward here, I'll be talking about options for where we can put our pre-funding. We don't have to give it to CalPERS. We can use some 115 trust options such as PARS. And we have talked about PARS a little bit with this committee in the past, not yet reached a comfort level where the committee wanted to put the money there. And that's part of the reason why I'm trying to be careful here to spread these conversations out over an appropriate period of time so that we're not trying to compress these important decisions into brief meetings.
Great. Thank you very much, Jeff. Madam Chair, I would hope, in the first quarter or second quarter next year, we can at least talk about this or revisit it just to look at our options. Whether we decide on a target date or not, I think it would be helpful just for us to revisit it with staff. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd suggest that maybe at the January retreat meeting, that when you discuss this, perhaps that's something that you can prompt, ask the full board to send back to the budget committee discussion around establishing a target date.
Thank you, Chair Rice. I'll do that.
Madam Chair? All right. Jeff, we're 73% funded. Is the $283 million the delta, or is that our entire obligation?
That's our entire obligation.
So 73% of 283 is what the delta is?
We are 73% funded, so a quarter of that is unfunded, which would be about $70 million.
Okay. Going along with Director Canepa's conversation and how we're going to do this, so 90% funding would be X, and we can figure that out. But when I look at how much we have in reserves and different things, at some point, going back to what Director Niss was saying, that is a little bit high, and we thank you. So it's the delta. Thank you.
Actually, so I would say just for this slide would be better to be able to make that clear that the unfunded portion is, you know, whatever that
yes.
40 million, 60 million, whatever it is.
Good okay. point. I will change that.
Yep. All right. Okay.
Onward. So some numbers. A lot of people who work with CalPERS are familiar with now. We're expecting a lowering of discount rates over 3 years. Per the discussion that was had on the previous item with Chair Niss, actually behind closed doors, CalPERS is saying probably 6.5%. And what is the implication to us? Well, here's the implication. Even just going to 7%, even without any additional staffing at the Air District beyond what's already budgeted, we will see our required annual contribution increase by $7 million over 4 years. And that raw number matters really, you know, primarily as a percentage of our budget. Our entire personnel cost is only $62 million. So it's going to be substantially over 10% of our current personnel budget that we will have to increase over the next 4 years. Let me talk about this a little bit. So it'll actually be worse than this. K-12 Can we handle this? Yes, we can. Can we handle this and step up to these new mandates? We can. And how can we do this? Well, similar to the downturn in 2007, it's not just by using one single tool. One important methodology is there is a policy in place, 85% cost recovery, and that policy over time will keep us able to fund these positions. To Director Hudson's point, we're not in any way trying to obscure the fact that that means fees go up because we are hiring more people. That is true. But that is not the only tool that we have. It is very consequential that we have aggressively pre-funded OPEB. Because we have aggressively pre-funded OPEB, we can eventually, over time, start to back off on that. Backing off on that gives us headroom in our budget to then apply those funds to CalPERS. It's also very significant that we're not waiting for these new requirements to hit, but we are now pre-funding, and in fact, in the 2018 budget, pre-funding by an extra $1 million. That also gives us headroom in the budget to back off on, so to speak. So by deploying a variety of different tools, we will be able to step up to this challenge. I'm not saying it will be easy, but we anticipate that we will be able to do it, and I will dive into that in more detail in January and February. And then I should also point out, in January and February, so I'll talk about continuing to pre-fund, but I will also talk again about the use of a 115 trust such as PARS, so as to have not all of our funds with CalPERS, but to have our funds dispersed in different places and perhaps be more accessible as well. Let me turn to a happy topic, OPEB, relatively speaking. It's all relative. So this is an old slide. And back in 2008, we had no funding for our medical retirement obligations. And the red line over time, please, you can ignore that there are two different red lines. Over time, although it seemed like a daunting task by putting one foot in front of the other every year, we, in 2015, were actually 50% funded on a $60 million obligation. And in fact, now we just got, I haven't updated the chart yet, we just got our latest numbers, and we're now almost 60% funded on a almost $70 million obligation. So we've made real progress on OPEB. Part of the reason is the board wisely allowed us to continue funding through the downturn, for which then subsequent returns were excellent. We do have a funding policy here too, a 90% funding level, again, no target date, which again can and should be revisited. And our pre-funding in the current fiscal year is $4 million. What I would bring forward then in January is discussion about continuing pre-funding and a discussion similar to CalPERS, where I would talk about the use of a 115 trust such as PARS. We're putting our OPEB money with CalPERS right now. Talk about possible use of a 115 trust such as PARS so that not all of our OPEB money is in one place. So to look forward, January and February, I'll do the financial overview. This was an overview of the overviews to come. I'll do a financial overview in part one, part two in January and February. In March, the board will refer the budget to this committee. In late March, then, you'll hear the first budget fee presentations, and in April, the committee refers the budget back to the board. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Any other questions at this point? Okay. Well, Jeff, thank you for the preview. Overview of the overview, parts one and two. It's actually, the agency is in really pretty excellent shape, but the challenges are pretty formidable, not only to meet the obligations that we see coming down the pike, but also and when we stay staffed so we can actually do the work that this agency is mandated to do. So stay on track, I hope. All right. Thank you very much. And I think with that, I will adjourn the committee meeting.
Thank you.